This is The Feed, York Region's only news magazine dedicated to the issues, events, and stories that matter to all of us who live and work here.
This is The Feed, York Region's longest-running and exclusive news magazine. I'm Ann Romer. Welcome. Coming up on the show, the device to curb illegal parking, building and protecting wealth, and supporting young entrepreneurs. But we begin with some sweeping changes coming to a school near you. Here to explain is Ontario's Minister of Education, Stephen Lecce. Minister Lecce, welcome to The Feed. Good to have you with us. Why the increase in cell phone restrictions and outright ban for certain ages and stages? Was your policy in 2019 not sufficient?
Well, the ban is for vaping and cannabis and nicotine, which is illegal in Ontario, and yet we have some of the highest rates of vaping and smoking when it comes to vape products in the world. So we have a serious problem. And that's why the government is committed to acting. In 2019, school boards were required to develop a policy. And of course, the policies were largely weak and ineffective. And that's why we're here, because we can't rely on a board development of policies. We need a provincial standard that really elevates, levels up, and massively increases the level of education and enforcement, as well as mental health supports and addiction services. So, 2019 was delegating to boards. The province has now looked at the data. It's insufficiently being enforced. And I want to give confidence to families that we will consistently bring forth a policy of educational change. We will stand by our staff when they enforce it. And we're obviously going to make sure that at the core of this, it's about education, and it's about teaching kids there's a better way to learn through responsible use of technology and understanding the perils of cannabis and vaping to a young developing mind. So there's a lot we're doing that is fundamentally different. And for the first time, the province is stepping in with a provincial standard and a much higher and more ambitious plan.
All right, let's talk about cell phones, and let's distinguish between the word ban and restriction, because there's a little bit of confusion.
Yes.
When it comes to kindergarten to grade 6, what are we looking at? And from 7 up, what are we looking at in terms of cell phone use or lack thereof?
So for our youngest kids, all day through the instruction, through their experience, they're not going to be having access to their phones. We're talking about kindergarten to grade 6. These are very young minds. So if they happen to have a cell phone in the first place, they'd be required to have it on silent mode or off, and it would just be sort of sitting not near the child, inaccessible. If a teacher wants to use discretion during lunch, if a parent needs to get a hold of the child or something like that, we allow exceptions. We allow flexibility. We will respect the judgment of teachers. But for the day, for the average day for a young kid, they're not going to have access to a phone if they have it. Teachers can make exceptions, for example, at lunch, during a recess, but that has to be with permission. Otherwise, this is the expectation. And then for our kids in grade 7 and up, middle school and high school, the policy essentially is out of sight, out of mind for the instructional time, meaning when a child is sitting in the chair in front of their teacher in their class, that's instructional time. That's where the policy of restriction comes in. We're not banning it. You can't, no jurisdiction has really done that right. We want to teach kids how to responsibly have technology and utilize it in their life, how to be responsible adults. So we're going to strengthen the learning on that. We're going to train our teachers on classroom management technique and how to deal with these issues. We're strengthening the mental health and addiction supports in community, $15 million more funded. And obviously, we're going to be putting, we're also adding the attention of students into the report card so that parents have a better sense of that knowledge. At the end of the day, what we're trying to do is change the culture in our schools to be more focused on academics and restoring discipline and academic rigor and, frankly, common sense back in our school system. So I have confidence that by working together, we can change cultures. But you're right, it is restricting, it is respecting judgment of teachers. When they know when there's a value add for technology, they will allow it. When they don't, I want parents and particularly the kids to know we stand by the staff, we will stand by them when they enforce it. We need to change culture. We need to do better in Ontario.
What's been the response from teachers about this? It will be then their responsibility, particularly
right,
for those from 7 and up, to monitor and to be the ones to be the bad guy, if you will, and say, give me that phone. And, how do they feel about that added responsibility, Minister Lecce?
Well, I think most teachers who've reached out to me actually conceptually agree with the policy, because it was teachers who told me over the past years, the policies of school boards are not being enforced by the board. So they urged me to bring forth the policy with teeth and to have their backs. And that's what this policy does. So any honest educator would acknowledge in their heart that we have a problem when it comes to attention spans and dependency on technology. So I'm grateful for those voices because they really helped to provide counsel on this. But parents particularly, 86% of Ontarians were surveyed last week, say, look, we have a problem, we need a strong solution. And that's why we brought forth a plan to restrict the cell phone, ban the vapes, and get back to learning and back to basics in Ontario schools. And I think it's long overdue. We stood by, CAMH, leading addiction and mental health center here in Toronto, endorsed the policy. We had the chief medical officer of health supported, every public health leader, pediatrician, SickKids, a variety of entities have put out endorsing statements saying, look, we need to confront these challenges. And it's of generational importance, and the government has the courage, the premier, our whole team is committed to seeing improvement and standing by our staff.
I've got to ask you this. Was this based on a model from somewhere else in the world, from the U.S., from somewhere in Europe, or is this strictly Ontario-grown?
It's an Ontario-developed policy. It was developed from the ground up, but it will be enforced from the top down. And I'm grateful for many students who will shape the policy. Remember, student trustees helped to design the vaping policy. When I asked them a simple question, what would change behavior? I said, call my parents, take away the device, not say put it away like many schools do, take it away, and then engage public health when necessary to see if there's a role for them to play on education and even enforcement too. So we've got to work together. I want to remain optimistic that by doing so, we can fundamentally improve the culture in schools and the mental health of children. And that's what we're talking about, safeguarding kids physically and mentally. And I think we have a lot of responsibility. We have a huge opportunity to get this right. And I just want to express gratitude to all the families and students and educators who will be working together over the coming months as we try to change paradigm shift in how we learn, how we think, how we behave, how we interact as young Canadians with each other and try to reestablish some human connectivity, emotional intelligence, and just the ability to communicate civilly in our schools. We're losing that. And that's what this is about.
You know, it's interesting. Kids spend one third of their day in school, Monday to Friday. Should some of this be coming from the home front rather than it resting on the shoulders of the school, the school boards, of the education minister? That would be you.
There certainly requires parental involvement. You're absolutely right. Lessons learned from jurisdictions east and west is that without community buy-in, it won't work. So we sent a letter home Monday morning outlining those expectations, that aspiration. And I think many families take this seriously. Parents understand the risks. They wrote to us urging us to act. And when you've got almost 9 in 10 Ontarians saying, do something about it, I think they understand that they've got skin in the game. And I know parents will do everything humanly possible to support this policy and support their kids. And that's what this is about, restoring academic focus and safety and common sense back in Ontario schools.
Education Minister Stephen Lecce, thank you very much for joining us on The Feed.
Thanks so much.
Shelley Zabakis is next with the creative ideas to boost mental wellness through brain fitness activities.
May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and we are all often in everyday situations that make us experience stress and anxiety, among other things. And joining me now to discuss this is Dr. Patrick Porter, brain scientist and founder of BrainTap. Welcome to The Feed.
Thanks for having me.
All right. We are in a time where a lot of things make us experience stress and anxiety. And why do you think that is?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that people have never learned how to really manage it. We're not taught in school how to manage stress. And if you think about every negative emotional state, we hold our breath. So the key really is to practice breathing techniques, which I can give some tips to the listeners that would help them to educate their nervous system so that when they get in these situations, they don't hold their breath. And if you notice just from this conversation, next time you're with somebody, even when you're communicating with them, people hold their breath all the time, and it accelerates those negative emotional states.
That is so true. And, I actually find myself doing that quite often. And I don't know if this is also connected to it, but blinking, is that a thing too?
Well, yeah. Well, sometimes blinking will cause people to disassociate so they can get rid of the stress. That's one of the signs that maybe somebody's overstressed, that they start doing things like that because the nervous system wants to release that tension. Think of that energy in the body like a battery that needs to discharge. And we need to find a way to do it. And unfortunately, a lot of people look for negative ways to discharge that stress instead of positive ways.
That's a very interesting point. Now, Dr. Porter, take us through the scientific part of things. What exactly happens to your brain when you experience anxiety or stress?
First of all, your blood flow begins to decrease, because it's just like if you clench your fist, you're going to decrease the blood flow to your hand. And then when you let it go, that blood flows in there. That's that tingling sensation. That's the release of stress. So everybody's looking for that release. So when you have lack of blood flow and circulation, you're going to start to even get headaches. You're going to have foggy brain. This all starts actually with your sleep. So if you're not getting good sleep, you can wake up in a chronic stress state that you think is normal, but it's not normal. So, you know, the main thing is that it downregulates the nervous system and puts you into a state of high stress even before you start the day, a lot of people.
And okay, so with that being said, how do we improve our sleep and our sleep habits?
Well, number one thing they can start doing tonight is do something called a 4-8 breath. So when you're in bed, instead of just trying to go to sleep, take a moment to visualize breathing in to the count of four and breathing out to the count of eight. And if you want to take it one step further, think of something you're grateful for. There's a lot of neuroscience that shows just by thinking of things like gratefulness and thankfulness and even forgiveness will release neuroactivity that actually creates what's called neuroplasticity and helps us to sleep better, bringing more energy to our brain.
And it's interesting that you bring that up as well, because I know a lot of people are into meditation and things like that. But then on the other side, there are people who don't necessarily believe in it. So how is that helpful?
Well, you don't have to believe in gravity, but it's still going to hold you to the ground. What we're talking about with mindfulness or meditation or things like brain tap is getting out of your everyday stress and getting into an altered state. Now, these are normal states of consciousness. We go into them all the time. It's just you're going into it with your awareness. So that's what they call mindfulness. You're becoming aware of things like your breathing. You're becoming aware of your body. You're becoming aware of the sounds around you. And just by calling that awareness in, your body will start to relax. Just like if I was to say to the listeners, go down and become aware of your feet. Instantly, you're going to become aware of your feet on the floor, on the gas pedal, whatever you're doing, when moments ago you weren't aware of it. But the moment you are, blood flows to that area because blood flows where attention directs it. So when you're doing this mindfulness, you're actually causing that vasodilation, blood flow circulation, which opens up your mind and body for a healing response called the parasympathetic reaction, which happens in the body to heal. Because our body knows how to heal. It's just stress inhibits that healing. It's almost like putting a governor on your gas pedal so that you can't speed. Your body knows how to do it, but it's being constricted because of the stress.
That is so interesting. And when you put it in those scientific terms, it actually just starts to make so much more sense. And I feel like, you know, you are pushing the idea that we need to take care of our brain the same way that we take care of the rest of our body. So tell us about brain fitness and why it's so important.
Yeah, well, we all know that if we don't physically work on our body, we're going to atrophy as we age. The same is true with our brain. It's called neuropruning. As we age, our body actually disconnects. It doesn't connect as we learn. It literally disconnects. So if we don't do something to exercise our brain, like doing breath work, mindfulness, brain tap, those kind of things, what happens is your brain simply begins to unwire because it's using so much energy. In order to conserve energy, it's going to start, those neural connections are going to be undone. We call this neural pruning. And as it happens through your life, pretty soon you start to forget things like, we don't remember the middle of the road things. We remember the very intense things, like the bad things that happened to us and the very good things that happened to us. So we have to maintenance those memories and keep those good memories alive by visualizing them, reliving them, re-experiencing them, and recalling them. You know, those are things that we can do to keep our brain going. And then also getting outside and walking on the earth. There's something called grounding, even though a lot of people might not believe that. If they go online and look at earthing, they'll see there's a lot of research that shows that getting on barefoot on the earth will actually reduce and eliminate the stress in our body. As we do those things, it's actually exercising our brain, being out walking. Exercise creates something called BDNF, which is what we need, brain-derived neurotrophic factors, which actually cause our brain to grow and have more energy through exercise. It's not just building our physical muscles when we exercise, but the recovery piece is so important. Every minute of physical exercise we do, we should be doing 2 minutes of recovery, because that recovery time is when we build our brain health, not while we're doing the physical exercise. Just like yoga, a lot of your listeners might be doing yoga, but if they don't do that yoga nidra, the ending part where you just lay there on the floor, That in India, they'll tell you, is the most important pose in yoga, because that's when your body assimilates all of the great changes you made during those yoga practice or Tai Chi or meditation or even physical exercise. You know, there's people like Tom Brady in his group TBRX, which we work with, that will tell you that the reason he was able to play in a Super Bowl at 44 years old was because he spent time recovering his physical fitness by doing things like Brain Tap.
That actually makes so much sense. And BrainTap is the app that you created for health and wellness. Can you tell us the inspiration behind creating this and what it actually does?
Yeah, well, my dad was a chronic alcoholic and he got help doing something called the Silva method, which is a meditation process. And they use machines, not what you would think about. It's not a spiritual practice. It's more of a physiological practice. And he would teach people how to relax, and they had a sound. And from that sound, I developed in the 80s, light to go with that sound. So with light and sound, the brain gets into a altered state, which then creates that neuroplastic response where you have more energy. We've all heard the expression, my children are too tired to sleep. Well, unfortunately, most people are too tired to meditate. They're too tired to sleep because the brain needs energy. So the light brings energy into the brain through vasodilation, blood flow and circulation, nitric oxide release. And once you have that energy, you can then contemplate, visualize, and expand your world, because you're now planning it in your mind. Instead of letting the world happen to you, it more happens through you. And we have over 2,000 sessions. So if somebody wants to work on specific things like addiction therapy or anything like that, we have sessions for those.
That is amazing. And I feel like that will help people in so many different ways. Now, Dr. Porter, before we let you go, if you had like three tips for Canadians this summer to get their stress and anxiety under control, what would you say?
Number one, get up in the morning without coffee, get outside and look at the sun as soon as you can in the morning without sunglasses and bare feet. You're going to have tremendous results. Number two, do the breathing technique that I shared earlier in the show, the 4-8 breath before going to sleep. And number three, one of the things people overlook is dehydration in the body, especially during summer. We need to drink half our body's weight in ounces of water. And if we dehydrate our brain up to 2%, its efficiency goes down almost 70%. So we need to keep our brain hydrated to work efficiently and to get more out of our life and reduce the physical stress that happens because of what's going on in the world around us.
Dr. Patrick Porter, brain scientist and founder of BrainTap. If our listeners want some more information on you and how to get the app and all of those things, where can we go?
If they go to braintap.com, they can see it, and there's a 14-day trial that they can try it out, see what they think. You know, it's always best to experiment with yourself. And then, of course, they can follow us on social media, where there's a lot of other tips on my YouTube channel. There's a lot of videos and tips for people they can just view and start to apply in their life today.
Amazing. Dr. Porter, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
After the break, investing beyond stocks and bonds. That story is coming up on the feed. We'll be right back.
Do you have a story idea for the feed? Call us at 416-335-1059 or email info@1059theregion.com. Ann Rohmer and more of the feed coming up. This is 1059 The Region.
Welcome back. Well, this caught my eye, how to build and protect your wealth using tips the banks don't tell you. Please welcome to the feed Adam Brown, Managing Director, Veritable Wealth Advisory in Burlington, Peterborough, Kingston, and also serving the GTA and Canada. Welcome to the show, Adam. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Anne. It's so great to be here, and thanks for having me today.
So tips that the banks don't tell you. First of all, why don't they tell you? And I'm all ears. Give us one good tip, Adam.
Oh boy, there's a lot of pressure with that question. I don't know if I would say there's just one good tip. You know, the get rich quick scheme is somewhat of a myth. I think what I would say and my advice to you would be do your homework. And there is so much news out there right now with this generation and the internet. And my advice is, whoever you're working with and whoever you're trusting to make decisions for you, make sure you do your homework and you ask the right questions so you feel good about their answers, because ultimately they're making the decisions for you. But it's your wealth, it's your money, and it's your responsibility to make sure that they're making the right decisions on your behalf.
So Adam, how do you create wealth? We are in tough economic times, and a lot of us we're in debt. We don't have anything really to speak of, perhaps some RRSP investments, but not a lot. We don't have wealth. How do we start building wealth?
Well, I think we've all heard this before, but you pay yourself first. And there's only a finite amount that we have to work with. We get our paychecks. It comes into our bank account. And typically people pay all of their debt first and do all of their spending, and they look to see what's left at the end of the month, and that's what they plan on saving. And there's nothing left at the end of the month. Mm-hmm. And so it's important that we come up with this budget where we know we're taking X amount of dollars out every single month, and then our clients have to work with what's left. And it's this balancing act of living today, but also planning for tomorrow and making sure that the teeter-totter is somewhat balanced, so we don't look back after 20 years and say we did all of this hard work and there's nothing left to show for it.
So what's the difference between saving and investing? And I mean, it's obvious, saving, you're trying to put money aside, but how do you know when it's time to start making that money work for you?
Well, we always say that the best time is today. If we didn't do it 20 years ago, which would have been the best time, then the next best time is today. And so saving it is when it comes into your account, and then investing it is making it work for us and making decisions on how we're going to grow for it. And compound growth, which means growth on top of growth on top of growth, is really what will create that wealth that will allow you to stop working one time and have your retirement pay your bills for you. And so you need to make sure that what you're choosing to do with your savings will do that work for you. And especially today with so much information, like I said off the top, it's hard to make that decision. And it's not your job to do that. You're not spending 8 hours a day making those decisions. You're spending 8 hours a day doing your day job. So you have to make sure that you ask the right questions and have the right person make that investment decision for you.
And you want to have investments that are going to offer good returns, but also that are safe. I mean, depending on at what stage you are in life, you specialize in alternative investments. What exactly is an alternative investment?
Well, it's a great question, and it's a very hot topic in the economic climate today. And I don't even love the word alternative. It means different, but what we do is not different. It's been prominent for years with the wealthy individuals and with the pension plans when we talk about alternatives, but traditionally Canadians invest in stocks and bonds. And the bigger money out there has been investing in alternative areas to stocks and bonds. So if you think about real estate, most Canadians own real estate, infrastructure, private companies, private debt, agriculture. These are all areas that are part of our economy but haven't been accessible for Canadians to invest in the past. And now we're seeing more and more Canadians wanting access to these areas because they fear traditional investments like stocks and bonds might not be enough for the long run.
Can you give me an example, for instance, what an agriculture alternative investment would look like?
Oh, well, thanks for asking about that one. It's exciting, near and dear to my heart. I grew up with our very close family friends running a dairy farm just outside of Hamilton. So I'm very emotional about the farming community. And so when our chief investment officer came to us with this idea that we'd be getting into farming, I just loved it. And so we are invested in about 15 different platforms around the world that farm almonds and cherries and dairy and all of these different great areas that turn fantastic profits and have absolutely nothing to do with the stock market. And so when these farmers make money, so do our clients. And when the value of their land goes up in value, it's profitable for our clients. So we're investing in great technology to help these farmers grow their platforms and produce solid, steady returns for our clients so they don't have to have as much stress, like you mentioned, around the markets going up and down. So that would be one example of an alternative area we can get involved in away from traditional stocks and bonds.
And it can be a win-win-win for the investor, the farmer, and for Mother Earth.
Well, that's exactly right. And that's also near and dear to our hearts, as we're creating a lasting environment for the next generation.
And how risky is an investment like that?
Every investment has its own risk. I think the important thing to remember is how it fits into the overall piece of the pie. So if you buy one individual stock, that would be considered risky. If you buy 10 individual stocks, you would be reducing risk. And then if you go even further and say, okay, now I'm going to buy 10 different asset classes, so stocks and bonds and farming and infrastructure, now I'm diversifying the risk even further. So if we look at any one individual investment like this farming project, if that's all that I owned in my portfolio, I'd consider that risky. But when I spread it out amongst all the other holdings in my portfolio, then I'm spreading that risk around, and that individual farming project becomes less risky to me on an individual basis.
Let's take a look at another alternative investment. It's student housing. Who knew?
Who knew? Well, you would assume that all the universities own these residential buildings on campus, but it's actually not the case. A lot of these residences are owned by investors, and they've been one of our top performers over the last number of years. So, Anne, if you think about who the tenants of these buildings are, they're students. Typically, mom and dad are paying the bill, not always, but a lot. So we know we're getting paid. There's typically a wait list to get into these buildings, so occupancy levels are very high, if not 100%. And you can't graduate unless you've paid the bill. So as a landlord, these are phenomenal opportunities on these university campuses to get involved in real estate. And typically there's a lot of jobs coming to campus and to these towns. So if you think about London or Kingston or downtown Toronto, you've got all of these jobs from the universities. So the buildings themselves are appreciating in value because all of the real estate in the neighborhood is typically appreciating. So great tenants and also great opportunity for growth for the building itself.
And a quick word on private debt. What kind of alternative investment does that offer?
Sure. That's been very hot as of late because of the interest rate rise. From the sounds of it, we hear that rates will come down later this year. But as they've been rising, it's been great for individuals invested in debt in general. So public debt would be when you lend money to the government or lend money to a company and they pay you interest in return. Private debt would be considered any sort of debt where it's not publicly traded. So I can't just go online and buy and sell private debt. I have to arrange that through a separate intermediary.
You know, it's interesting. I'm looking at alternative investments, and you're opening doors that I've never even seen the doorknob, let alone go through the door itself. Why do banks not offer alternative investments?
It's a great question. So, you know, banks are publicly traded companies. They have a duty to their shareholders to produce profits and to pay dividends to their shareholders. And the banks are more profitable when they are selling their own individual products. And not that alternative investments are new. The pension plans have been doing this for years. They just haven't been as available to the everyday investor. So the banks haven't had them on their shelf. The banks are massive companies. So for them to shift towards alternative investments and away from the traditional mutual funds or individual stocks that they've been selling for years, it's really difficult to move that ship into that different direction. So they're starting to dip their toe and to start talking about these alternative investments, but I think it'll be years and years and years before they become the majority of the investments that they're offering. Whereas right now you might have 1-2% opportunity in the banks, which is a very low percentage as it relates to your overall portfolio.
And where does Veritable Wealth Advisory fit in all of this?
So Veritable Wealth is a privately owned company. We're independent. The independent world has become very popular in the U.S., and Canada tends to be about 10 years behind. And we're starting to see more and more Canadian wealth managers go toward the independent world and get away from this conflict of interest that exists in the banks, where we're only allowed to sell bank products because they make more money that way. So we're an independent firm. We work with families and businesses with complex planning needs, and we help integrate this investment solution that we're talking about today into their planning needs.
Adam Brown, Managing Director, Veritable Wealth Advisory, thank you so much for giving your time for investing in us, in a way, here at The Feed on 105.9 The Region. Much appreciated.
It's my pleasure, Anne. Thank you.
Building wealth is the goal of every small business person. Glenn Perkins with the incentives available to young entrepreneurs.
Dino Infante, partner and national leader at KPMG Private Enterprise Tax, is with us. Dino, welcome to The Feed.
Thank you, Glenn. Appreciate it.
You've been going through the federal budget. Tell me, are there measures to help younger Canadians?
Yes, Glenn. In the federal budget, certainly there were measures to help young Canadians. As it relates to housing, for example, as it relates to developing businesses and what have you. On the housing side in particular, there are some measures as it related to not only young Canadian buyers, but also renters and as well as developers.
What supports are available to younger entrepreneurs and small business?
Yeah, so from a perspective of the budget, there's really a few measures that come into play in terms of young entrepreneurs. The increase to the lifetime capital gains exemption to $1.25 million. Currently, it's at $1 million. And that applies to the sale of small business shares and certain types of shares related to farming and fishing property. And the other measure that is new is this Canadian Entrepreneurs Incentive. And this is a measure that essentially reduces the capital gains inclusion rate in half, up to a lifetime maximum of $2 million. Now, that's going to be phased in over a 10-year period. So the sum of those two, Glenn, equate to, you know, an exemption of approximately $3.25 million when all or part of a business is being sold.
Dino, let's talk about technology, AI programs, training and skills development. Are these the focus areas for young people and the budget?
Yes, and I guess let's just stand back. I mean, private enterprise certainly see the benefits of digital transformation and recognize that generative AI is a game-changing technology. Now, leading up to this budget, there was $2.4 billion announced aimed at a new compute access fund to really focus on growing that sector and, you know, scaling up startups.
We were just talking about young entrepreneurs. Is the federal budget about making life more affordable for young people?
Well, look, there's measures that have been announced in this budget, as we talked about, the housing measures, albeit ambitious, to build almost 4 million homes or 3.9 million homes by 2031. There are some measures pertaining to child care as well as the Canada Dental Plan. Now, look, at the end of the day, you need to focus on long-term growth that ultimately benefits the next generation.
And now that the dust has settled and we've had time to digest this budget, what are your thoughts?
Well, certainly the capital gains inclusion rate increase is something that some Canadians are looking at. There's a window of opportunity here before the capital gains inclusion rate goes up, being June 25th. And so there's some opportunities and planning to be had around that. The alternative minimum tax adjustment was welcomed relief, where essentially to allow for the increased donation tax credit. So again, that helps facilitate philanthropy. And the measures we spoke about earlier pertaining to, you know, encouraging entrepreneurial investments are quite positive. I guess to sum it all up, you know, look, time will tell whether the 2024 budget has struck the right balance between the spending and investments and, of course, economic growth that stimulates a Canadian economy that innovates and creates jobs and ultimately invests in technology as well.
Finally, Dino, if listeners want more information, how do they connect with KPMG in Canada?
Yeah, so directly to our website, KPMG website. On our website, there's a whole host of budget material and other tax commentary that they can find on our website.
Dino Infante, partner and national leader, KPMG Private Enterprise Tax. Thank you for joining us today on The Feed.
Thank you very much, Glenn.
When we come back, a new parking enforcement tool. This is The Feed on 105.9 The Region. Stay with us.
Follow us on Twitter at 105.9 The Region. Ann Romer and more of The Feed after the break. This is 105.9 The Region.
Welcome back to The Feed. I'm Ann Romer. If you're one to ignore parking tickets, a new device is on the horizon. Jim Lang with the explanation.
All right, parking in North America is always a concern, and how you enforce parking is something that's been evolving, and at the forefront of that is someone and something called barnacle parking. To talk more about their really innovative way for keeping track of parking and monitoring parking, thrilled to be joined by their CEO, the chairman of Barnacle Parking, Colin Heffron. Colin, how are you?
Good, thanks. Good morning, and thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Now, for years, I associated with parking violators getting the Denver boot, but you have something that's completely different that goes on the windshield that replaces it and changes the metric for how cities and municipalities and townships monitor parking. Explain to the listeners, what exactly is the barnacle?
So it's an evolution in parking enforcement. I mean, it's a device that unfolds, weighs 17 pounds, and adheres to your windshield via two suckers that are controlled by an electric pump. But the really good news is if you do get it on your windshield, you can be on your way in 5 minutes by QR coding the device, getting online, paying your fines, and then you get a four-digit code that you pump into the device, the vacuum's released, and you get a text on where to drop it off.
As opposed to the Denver boot where you were stuck there until you actually had to go to the town office and pay the fines.
Yeah, I mean, the Denver boot is frankly a bit archaic. You'd have to go all the way to the town pound, pay all your fines, go back, wait for your car. You know, it could be somewhere between 4 and 8 hours before you're on your way.
So I know it's now evolving to Canada. It's many locations in the United States. University of Regina are using it to enforce parking. It's coming around to other municipalities as well. The municipalities that use the barnacle, what kind of feedback are you receiving, Colin?
So it's been great. I mean, one of the things that they really like is that it drives compliance. You know, if you go into a parking lot or drive through a town and cars are booted, you really can't see it, so you're not discouraged from parking illegally. Or if you tow a car, you know, no one knows it happened because the car is gone. Versus if you come, you know, down the lane and you see a bunch of cars with the, as Jimmy Fallon called it, SpongeBob on the front window, on the windshield, it's a great deterrent. So it doesn't take as many as you think to really drive compliance. And, you know, that's better revenue, clearer streets, more mobility.
Now, you just alluded to the SpongeBob comparison, and it's not just Jimmy Fallon, NYPD. A lot of different people are referring to that sort of a reference. But to have someone like Jimmy Fallon refer to your product has to feel good after all the work that's gone into it, Colin.
It does. It's my friends called it earned media. But yeah, my head exploded when we saw that. It's been a very, very good week, and we've been working very closely with NYPD. They're a great partner. And I think they're having a very successful time with it.
Now, for people listening, thinking if this comes to York Region, the GTA, Toronto, wherever you live, and you're just going to take it off your windshield, drive away, here's the rub. If you try to tamper with it, it has what they call a, quote, ear-piercing alarm, which I would imagine, Colin, you could hear from blocks away.
Yeah, it's got an ear-piercing alarm and a tamper alert, so the police will be informed directly if you're tampering with it, and then usually they send a policeman over to tow it or, you know, tell you to stop. So it's, you know, I know that people don't like to be immobilized, but this is a really lighter, softer touch. I mean, you really are on your way. And if you think about, you get to drive through streets that are much clearer because box trucks aren't blocking all the lanes, it's a pretty good result for everyone.
Speaking with Colin Heffron, the chairman of Barnacle Parking, and the reality is, Colin, whether you're on either side of the border, if you're a town or a city, the revenue from these parking fines is vital for services. So if you have multiple parking fines, you have to pay them.
No question. And, you know, that money goes directly to building schools, building better roads, having more police on the beat. You know, it's just part of the ecosystem that, you know, we need to support.
Okay, I have to ask you, how did you come up with the concept?
So I lived in London for a very long time, my early career, and I got booted fairly regularly. and I just found it, you know, very, 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 very painful. So a friend of mine, Russ Marks, and I started working on a plan to make a better solution. And we came up with the putting it on the windshield. But the aha moment was the self-release and the GPS tracking. That elevated the device to, it was a little bit like when the cell phone came.
Yes.
People still had landlines for a while. I think there's very few people who have landlines, and I think there'll be very few people who tow or boot in the future.
And because of the technology, I mean, even your grandmother has a smartphone that can use a QR code and get her car released.
No, exactly. And, you know, improvements will continue. I mean, it'll be tap friendly soon. So we're going to continue to invest in the product and make it more and more convenient. I mean, if it's safer for the administrator and more convenient for the violator, we feel like it's a better result for everyone.
Okay, so now here's the thing for people listening as well. There's a report that a private company in Ontario signed on to use Barnacle. Are you able to share the details about the company in Ontario? Or is that still a secret with you and Barnacle Parking?
I can't share the details. I know we have a customer up there using, but we currently have about, you know, 30 or 40 in the pipeline. So I suspect you're going to see it in Canada over the next 12 to 16 months, pretty much everywhere.
Colin, when you started this, did you have some sort of game plan or blueprint or goal in mind how it would unfold, or is this beyond even what you expected?
Well, we thought it was a great solution. We thought it would work everywhere, but, you know, life is not a straight line, and business is always full of challenges. I mean, originally I thought we'd sell them, but then we realized that supporting the device and supporting the technology and the app and the software required a subscription model. So it's changed over the years. And then, frankly, COVID was, a real punch in the face. But, you know, we all survived it, and I think that helped us regroup.
It's amazing. I just love the product. I love the concept. I love the science behind it. Barnacle Parking, as Jimmy Fallon says, it looks like SpongeBob on your windshield, but you have to pay the fine to get it off. For people who want more information, or maybe someone listening that maybe want to utilize your product, what's the website they should go to?
Barnacleparking.com. It's got all the information you need, and really appreciate your time this morning.
Well, Colin, it's my pleasure. It's a great product, and I just love your passion for it, and all the best in the future.
You too, and I should be rooting for the Canadians or the Maple Leafs?
The Maple Leafs, please!
Okay, all right, just wanted to confirm that.
Thanks, Colin.
Have a great day.
You too.
If you missed any part of the feed, please go to 1059theregion.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and Audible. I'm Ann Rohmer. Thank you so much for listening.